in Norseman they use a hose and a fan belt. But in Noongar, you know, like, things that shouldn't have occurred.
I was mainly helping my friends and also getting flogged for just helping them. We had beltings from a big fan belt or by the cane.
I could never stand up the next day. I could never walk around. And it was the most cruelest experience that anybody can put on. A dog wouldn't get the same punishment.
Anyway, I scratched my ear and one day the missionary shouted at me and said, "Get in here!" And he told me to turn around, and while he was talking to me, I told you not to. He was sharpening two pencils, and then he shoved them both in my ears, busted my eardrums. And I wasn't allowed to say nothing to nobody, not even to the mission kids, not even to school friends. For years, I was at school, I was sitting down holding my ears like this so I can hear the teacher. And she said, he or she kept saying, "Are you okay? Can you hear?" I said, yeah, I just got a sore ear. I had to make some story up to him until 2021, finally got hearing aids.
Wow, some excerpts from genocide in the Wildflower State, which RTR staff and volunteers were able to see last night, a special screening. There you have Gail and Gary, excerpts of survivors from both Noongar Mission and Noongar Mission, which will be featured quite heavily on the 28th of April at the public screening at Luna Theatre. Go to Luna Theatre and go online and reserve your tickets. But we're going to be hearing some more about genocide in the Wildflower State today. A couple of amazing role models, I would like to call them, Tony. So welcome to Munish Mag. It's our weekly good news stories, although you may consider not to be good news given the news we've had in the last 24 hours as another death in custody, if you like, and what care our services are taking for our First Nation people. So welcome, Tony.
Thanks, Jim, and it's great to be back on air again to our RTR FM listeners. And yeah, it was a great opportunity last night to sit down with the RTR family and screen their documentary and, just have a bit of a Q&A at the end of the evening, which was really great. And again, as you just echoed there, it is again another sad day in our state. We're institutions and government should be looking after our children, and sadly there's another failure there again.
Yeah, Gail and Gary, both from Mission Time. Just over 12 months ago we met up in Albany with Noongar and Marybank survivors, Marybank near Katanning and Noongar Mission. Well, you know, Noongar down there on Goorang country over near Bullamere, otherwise known as Bluff Knoll. So their stories and testimonies were, well, recorded and on camera. Today you've heard a bit of audio that you're going to hear more about or see more about if you care to come along to the genocide in the Wildflower State at the Luna Theatre on the 28th of April. You'll need to go online and get your tickets. It's something that shouldn't be missed if you're anxious about truth-telling in Australia, if you're anxious about First Nation peoples. And, our guest today will be our own manager, who was with us last night, to give a preview on what he saw as being a guru in the movie space, and wonderful friends of the First Nation people, both Professor Fiona Stanley, Australian of the Year, otherwise referred to as a liar by the ex-premier, and another old friend that was involved in 60 Minutes Foreign Affairs, a retired gentleman who's been also very supportive of our documentary Genocide in the Wildflower State, and that's Jeff McMullen, a longtime friend and supporter, a couple of wonderful people that will give us a preview. And as we move forward, we might get other people to preview as well, and it might be that you don't agree with the documentary. It might be that you don't agree with what's being said in the documentary. And Tonji, I liken it to Dark Emu.
Yeah, Jim, it is. And I think it's, I've been saying, you know, it's a great opportunity for all West Australians to get to know a little bit more about the truth.
Mm.
It's our shared history.
It is.
It's our shared history. We've been here for 65,000 years, and our wider community has only been here for 200 years.
That's it, and it's important, I think, a bit of truth-telling, getting you to understand what Murich Mag is all about. I mean, it's probably our 153rd podcast now, so we've been around a couple of years telling you good stories, and so we're really keen to have our listeners come along. Have our listeners, you know, pass on the word, but as I said, Dark Emu, Bruce Pascoe was slammed by a lot of so-called research people who criticised the way he went about things, but like genocide in the Wildflower State, Dark Emu was based on white people's research. Mm-hmm. What genocide in the Wildflower State is based on is white people research. So it's, will you call them liars? Would you call them non-truths? So that's what we're on about today, and it's going to be great to hear from Professor Lois? Fiona Stanley? Yes. I'm getting mixed up. Lois is on my mind somewhere on the line. I think I know why. And Jeff McMullen, an honoured gentleman in himself, AO, and involved in lots of writings. In fact, he was at the commemoration of the apology this year that we missed out on.
Mm.
No, you were there.
Yeah, I was there. And
you saw him?
Yeah, Jeff's he's an inspiration, you know, just to have there behind the mic. And EMC'd the event at the Great Hall, and so passionate about this work right across the country.
So, yes, we've got friends on our program. They've been friends of Murich Mag for a lot of this time, and we'll have Fiona Stanley, Professor, coming up shortly. So here we've got – let's go to a song, and then we'll get Fiona Stanley on board. Yes, and before those commercial and community announcements, Take No More, Emma Donovan and Kiana, courtesy of Archie Roach Foundation, which we might play a little bit more of a little later. Archie Roach, Take No More, which features in our documentary, Genocide in the Wildflower State, which RTR is sponsoring and previewing over the next week. And one of our first people to preview is Professor Fiona Stanley. Good morning.
Hello, Jim. Thank you.
Oh, look, welcome to Murich Mag. It's great to have you on the show. I've got to remind people that you're one of the first interviews after COVID, and I thought I did a great exercise in recording you at home, and you know, straight away lost the recording. So apologies for that. Fiona, welcome to Murich Mag, where myself and Tony Hanson is my co-host. Nick Abraham's gone.
Hi, Tony.
Great to talk to you, and yes, it's been a disturbing day for us, and it's going to be a tough yarn with you today, but Fiona, it's certainly a privilege and a pleasure to be talking to you, regardless of what's happened today, and I think we can't take that off our brain just at the moment, but you've been one of the few people to look at our documentary, Genocide in the Wildflower State, and RTR have been amazing in supporting this, and I guess Sunday week it'll be screened at the Luna. So welcome, Fiona. I usually start by saying who's your mob and where you're from, but I know you're born in Little Bay in New South Wales, but would you like to say more? Who's your mob and where you're from?
Well, La Perouse, actually. I came from very close to La Perouse, so my first memories of Aboriginal people was Joe Timbury trying to teach me and my brother how to throw a boomerang, and he then went on to throw the boomerang for the Queen. But it took a long time for me, after coming to WA, to realise, you know, I was an unqualified nursing aide at the second year medicine I did, and I went up to Port Hedland as an unqualified nursing aide, and I went out on the, you know, the doctor flights all the way down to Wingerlina, Giles, Blackstone, all those communities which are now part of the Ngatindjara lands, and opened my eyes for sure. And there was in Hedland, only 800 people lived in Hedland, you wouldn't believe it, very old, but there was a native hospital separate from the white hospital.
Mm. Oh, now we're talking truth-telling and history, so...
Yeah, so there's a lot of truth-telling, but what I just want to say about the little one who passed away yesterday in state care, is this is a direct outcome of The Stolen Generation and what the whole film is about. A direct outcome. You can put this this child's death right on a pathway that started with removal. And the reason I'm so strong about that, Jim and Tony, is that we did a study. I think we're the only place in the world to do a study to look at the extent and the impact of the Stolen Generation in our Aboriginal populations. We did it in 2002-03. It was run by Steve Zubrick and a whole group of others, including Ken Wyatt, Ted Wilkes. We had wonderful Aboriginal people guiding us on this survey. One in five Aboriginal children and their families were interviewed. And this is what is so important. We analysed the data by ATSIC communities, right? And between 40 and 60% of all ATSIC community populations gave a history of forced removal. If that's not a stolen generation. Now, we sent the data to the Howard government, of course, and they didn't believe it, so we had to reanalyse it all over again and write several more papers to do it. Mm. So the Bringing Them Home report to me, as well as our survey, is one of the most important documents for the Stolen Generation. And now this film, Jim. This
Wow. If you just tuned in to Mudish Mag on RTR FM 92.1 Noongar Radio and Great Southern FM, we're talking to the woman who public hospital's been named after, Fiona Stanley. Fiona, I was there this week and we'll be there again next week. I've suffered a burn on my ankle, which I won't bore you with today, but
no.
Fiona, you've
got to look after yourself, Jim.
I think the problem is I'm getting a bit old now and a little burn is lingering. But yeah, Fiona, I've been sort of working with you now for some time. We've been monitoring Bankshire Hill and, yes, we are saddened by the recent news. We were saddened by what happened to the young Dodd boy. And the data you're sharing and the information you're sharing is so important to our listeners, because I'm really hoping that RTR FM listeners, whether they be involved in the station through broadcasting or volunteering, I want our listeners to understand the real issues that we're dealing with. So, Fiona, it's good that you've given some background, and if we were to talk some more about your background, we'll be here for a couple of days. So we won't just do that. But what was your first impression when you saw genocide in the Wildflower State? I mean, genocide, Wildflower State, WA is famous for its wildflowers.
It's a wonderful title. It's a wonderful title. I think what was so powerful as soon as I saw it were the visuals. And it's the same thing when I went to the launch of the Bringing Them Home report and seeing the movies and the visuals of the children in these missions and horrendous environments, large numbers of children being, you know, military almost in their rigorous control, and you put your children there. Mm. And if you put your children there, you just can't stop crying. You cannot stop crying. Mm. And then the stories that people told are so powerful. The fact that you didn't know it was your brother who had come in, because you were taken when you were 8 months old and you didn't know that he was your brother. I mean, to me, those sorts of... That's more than just... genocide is cruel, but it's more than just trying to eradicate the Aboriginal race. It's doing it in a cruel way.
Mm.
Because this was absolutely due to the Neville, but also other policies, which you quote. You know, you go right back to the beginning in this film.
Yep, we do.
Quotes from other Aboriginal so-called protectors who are equally horrible. And you quote people like Drake Brockman and the fact that this was just absolutely normal, that we would get rid of anyone of mixed race, and all the black, full-blood black people, as they were called, would die out. So we just had to not worry about them. I mean, the photos that you show of, you know, quadroons and octoons, and then you show a little blonde boy who, as E.O. Neville said, you wouldn't know that there were any Aboriginal people in Australia.
Mm.
I mean, Christ the Lord.
Yes.
You're not all religious out there, but I'm...
Fiona, we opened up the show today with Gail Yorkshire and Gary Ryder talking about their testimony.
Yes.
And this took place just over a year ago in Albany when we helped launch the Bessie Flowers book.
Yes,
which was a marvellous story.
Wandering Spirit.
Yes.
It's a wonderful book. It's a wonderful book. I think it's a model book of how you should work as a historian, a white historian, with an Aboriginal man, Ezra Flowers. It is an extraordinary book. I loved it.
Of course, there is a video on YouTube. If you want to Google Bessie Flowers, it'll come up. It's a lovely piece of work of young girls, Minang girls, taken from Albany by boat to Koori Country in Melbourne, and then their descendants, descendants coming back. So
they ended up at Lake Tyre. It's all connected, isn't it? But I think that your point about this being worse in WA, and not only worse in extent, but worse in how long it went on.
Mm.
You know, it was mid-70s. I mean, I was already a doctor then, in the mid-70s. I was already a young doctor working out at the Aboriginal Advancement Council with the New Era Aboriginal Fellowship. We needed to have that Bringing Them Home report. But the point about it is that even, massacres, the latest or the most recent one that I knew of was the 1928 massacre up at Woolman. The Fire, Fire Burning Bright, which was the opera that Fatty Bedford, rest in peace, was part of. And that was 1928.
Mm.
I mean, it's not like your lifetime or my lifetime, but it nearly bloody is. It's our parents' lifetime.
Fiona, thanks for taking the time to talk to us today. As you say, from our point of view, a very, very important documentary. We're concerned that the WA government hasn't picked up the issue around compensation.
Yes. It's... I don't know. Well, this is why the film is so important. If we can get a lot of the politicians on both sides, all sides, and also the senior bureaucrats and so on to look at this, you should have a government showing if you can do it. I'd do anything to help you to have that if you would like. But it seems to me that's so important. But what's so incredible is you did not die out.
Three or four generations.
Or whatever the bloody was. You survived, although the trauma on the faces of the people in the film are almost too much to bear, but you have survived. But what's so amazing for me, because I've just finished writing a little book with Sandra Eads and another Tasmanian Aboriginal woman called Shawana Andrews on first knowledges in medicine. And these First Knowledges books are all about different aspects of Aboriginal science and culture and capacity and understanding of land and so on. And ours is on medicine. And what's so amazing to me, because I interviewed elders for this book on things like birthing on country, that the oral history is still the most important way of transmitting these knowledges. That's extraordinary. Isn't that extraordinary?
It is, but the ancient...
But it's awful, but it's... Yeah. Yeah. You know what I mean?
Yeah, the ancient knowledge is also coming from our leadership with politicians and Hansard and political people making statements about read us out. So, Tondi, you want to...
Absolutely.
Yeah, thanks.
As a group of people, and forgiveness is extraordinary. And I went to about a week after the horrendous no vote, I went to a beautiful, out at the Champion Centre in Arbordale, I went to a beautiful Noongar birth certificate ceremony where Viv and Mort Hanson and Chrissy Parry had done these beautiful birth certificates of the Noongar seasons and gave them to all of the children who'd been born in that season. And so there were about 200 or 300 kids there. It was absolutely gorgeous. And then at the end of it, Chrissy Parry said, "We're not going to left with these certificates to Aboriginal children. We want to give them to everyone."
Mm.
It was a week after the vote. Mm. I just sort of wept again.
Yes.
But, I mean, that's generosity and forgiveness. I mean, in America, there would have been race riots.
Mm. That's just so amazing, Fiona. And I guess I was just going back there when you were talking about 1970, when you were starting your work. As you were starting your work, I was actually entering my journey as a Stolen Generation survivor, entering the Marybank Baptist Mission period. And, you know,
we went
in 1970 and then, you know, sadly left in 1985 as one of the last kids from the institution.
My God. Oh, my God. Well, we went to Murray Bank and there was beautiful artwork from the women.
Yes.
These beautiful silk-screened scarves. Oh, I never forget that. But Murray Bank, oh, all these, like, wandering. It was a disaster after the Carillon closed. All these things that, of course, you couldn't put everything in the film, but it came through so strongly anyway. But, you know, talking about Yorkshire, Mr. Yorkshire, what's his first name? Sorry.
There was Bobby. Yeah, there was Rob the... Bobbit, Bob? Oh, yeah, hang on. You mean Warren?
I mean Warren Yorkshire.
Yes.
And after a funeral once, he said to me, you know that the Fiona Stanley Hospital is built on the most important Noongar birthing site in the metropolitan area. So I think we've got an opportunity now with birthing on country coming back to start thinking about how we really acknowledge how wonderful these ways, these grandmothers' ways of family and support are so powerful. So I think that we should do something about that.
We should. We're talking to Professor Fiona Stanley, one of our major hospitals named after her. Fiona, what would you like to tell our listeners about the production, the documentary? I want to hear you encourage our listeners to get online, go to the Lunar Theatre. Yeah, can you tell our listeners
come? Well, I think, you know, you don't be frightened by this film. I think it's really important that you don't. It's not a film that necessarily should make you guilty. It's a film that should make you understand. It is about truth telling, and it's beautifully done. It's the combination of some of the Stolen Gen folk telling their stories, of people at a rally, of people at a meeting in Albany. But what is interspersed with that are the photographs of the white protectors of Aborigines and other politicians with the most extraordinary statements that you cannot believe. And it's sort of, you catch your breath when you see them. And then these amazing visuals of the children who were taken, the numbers and numbers of children. So it's not, I didn't actually... You know, Jim, I didn't feel guilty. I felt angry. I felt angry with my country. But if we're going to get to a place where we're going to really be able to hold our head up as a nation, this is the truth-telling that we talked about during the Voice campaign.
Right.
It's a beautiful example of it. And having a film is just... It's. I don't know who you did it beautifully. That's all I can say. You did it really beautifully, and I'm engrossed. Really, I was engrossed.
Fiona, thanks for being on the show. I want you to introduce the next song because you mentioned it earlier. We Have Survived. You know the song?
Oh yes. Thank you. I'm going to have a little weep now.
We Have Survived. The White Man's World. The band is No Fixed Address.
What keeps me going quite a lot working with you guys is this love we have for each other, but also you're bloody funny.
Thanks. Thank
some
you.
Some of your jokes are appalling and some of mine are appalling, but boy, we have to have a laugh every now and again.
We do, and some people call you a liar and a radical, but we love you. Thank you for being on the show, Fiona. The famous hospital is named after her. And our next guest is Geoffrey John McMullen. He's an Australian journalist and author and television and radio presenter. He was a foreign correspondent for the Australian Broadcasting Corporation for almost two decades and later joined the Australian version of 60 Minutes from 1985 to 2000. He has written numerous articles and several books and is known for championing the rights of First Nations people in Australia. Welcome, Geoff.
Thank you, Jim.
Geoffrey McMullen, so good to have you on the show. You've been on the show once before, but this time, welcome from the other side of the country. Welcome to Noongar Boodja here. It's great to hear your voice, Geoff. How are you feeling today?
Older. I can't say wiser, but I think we learn more about our past every day. So that is one thing that comes with age.
Geoff, say hello to Tony Hanson, one of the youngest survivors of removal in the country. Geoff, I think you know Tony. You might have met him in Canberra earlier this year.
It's good to be with you, Tony.
Yeah, good to hear from you, Geoff. It was good to be in the Great Hall with you early this year, and I think the last time you and I met was in Sydney when we had the Kinchla Boys bus launch, and you and I were on the radio talking to Jim on the same station.
The world goes round and round and round, Geoff. So welcome to Murish Mag, Noongar Radio and Great Southern FM. And, you know, you've been an acquaintance, a friend and a mentor and a good old cobber for a long time now. Jeff. So welcome to Murray's Mag to talk about, well, new things happening in the wildflower state. You know, Western Australia is famous for wildflowers. It's now famous for probably having the youngest people deaths in custody, a 10-year-old overnight, and the youngest person to die in an adult prison, Mr. Dodd. Yes, what have we got to be proud of, Jeff? And, you know, you've been a critic, not so much a critic, but supporting me for a number of months, probably 12 months, Jeff, on this production. So how are you feeling about it, and what's your first impressions?
I've watched this film emerge, and I'm so impressed by the clarity and the measured words of every single Aboriginal voice that is raised here. And to put those voices, while we have these people alive to be clear about the past, to put those voices in the context of what is very simply set out as a systematic policy involving government and missions and churches, the institutionalisation of this policy, it is really something that every Australian will be wiser for watching. And I would just encourage everyone to seek out this film after it's launched this month. It is so important to know the truth of the past to understand why things are like they are today. Those things you mentioned, the ongoing deaths, the suicides, and the over-incarceration of Aboriginal people is clearly a consequence of what happened in the phase of genocide.
Mm. Well, you put it so clearly. I mean, you know, we've sort of compared it in our own little way to Bruce Pascoe's Dark Emu, where Bruce talks about what he finds in research, what he finds in whitefellow words, if I put it that way, in his research, and he just duplicates in his book Dark Emu, and he's been criticised for it. We're doing the same thing here in Western Australia. We're using the research, words of politicians, words of out of Hansard. So thank you for putting it so clearly. And, you know, your words hopefully will encourage our listeners to get along to see this. The first showing will be the 28th of April. We'll have a showing down at the Albany Town Hall on the 10th of May. But what else strikes you about, I mean, earlier we played Gail and Gary talking about their testimony, and they opened up the program today. What else did you find interesting about it, if at all?
The context in the film is the best explanation I've seen in this sense of how this country, Australia, seeing itself as white and wanting to maintain the dominance of whites, how it set about in all kinds of ways to institutionalise a very intentional destruction of Aboriginal people in the sense of their future, their use of language and culture and practice, how all of these things, in fact, meet the standard of the United Nations definition of genocidal intent. And in particular, what the film captures is the generational trauma that flows through to children and grandchildren, the ongoing damage caused by a genocidal policy. So I think this is valuable for healing and understanding, and it's essential to have government, state, territory and federal come up with a policy towards the First People that genuinely acknowledges all of this history and begins to build a road for recognition of rights, some pathway towards justice that so clearly has been denied to this point.
Mm. Well said. I mean, the campaign that the genocide in the wildflower state attempts to address is the dreadful fact that we don't have a compensation program in Western Australia, but also Queensland. But what we're also proposing is one of the recommendations of the Bring Them Home report, Jeff, is for a national redress scheme that would need to be looking quite broadly at what that means, I would have thought. I mean, compensation for people stolen, yes, but initially it was about descendants, siblings, parents. And we know there are lots of stolen people out there that also had their parents stolen, have had their children stolen. It's just a continuing, you know, continuing cycle. So it's something that you've put well for us, to our listeners. So it's really... It's really a pleasure to have you on the show. I just want to go back on some of your other work. You know, you've worked with the Jimmy Little Foundation. You were a guest speaker at the Vincent Lingari Oration back in 2015 at the Charles Darwin University. You know, the work that you've done is really to be admired, Jeff. So what else can you tell us, and how can you encourage our listeners to get along to this event?
Well, my work, I'm 76. All of my adult life, I had to come to grips with the consequences of the past and what I was still seeing happen as I began reporting in the 1960s and 1970s took me to the main issue of this impact of the colonial settler period, and how the combination of very deliberate policy to eliminate people who could be considered as Aborigines in the sense of blood. This was all about measuring people in terms of a dissection of their humanity. So I shudder to even use these words now, Jim, in the 21st century, but the truth is that those chief protectors in the past that had that euphemistic name of protecting people, in their own words, as you see in the film, were setting out to breed out the colour of the first people and then to dissect their culture and value as human beings by whether they were a quarter, a half caste, or three quarters. It is such a confronting thought that from the time of the Nazis and their eugenic systems, we have in white officialdom in Australia, out of their own mouths, in their written words, in the parliamentary debates, you hear this same discussion about breeding out the colour, taking the half castes and stopping them from intermarrying with the full bloods. This kind of language is horrific, but it explains how we got to where we are today and what has flowed across those generations. It was very systematic. And so throughout my working life, Jim, I've been confronted by listening to the survivors explain it and then studying very closely what is the evidence that this indeed is genocide.
Jeff, we've had a yarn previously, and it's whilst we're talking genocide here for First Nations people in Australia, you've had a long experience in looking at genocide across the world. Could you give us a brief summary of what that involved? Because whilst we're talking about the Gaza and talking about things that are happening around the world currently, you've been involved in investigating this for a while. What has been your findings, and how does that compare with Australia?
What I've learned is that throughout human history, there has been killing of the kind that we now use the word genocide to describe. Killing that intentionally sets out to destroy a certain part of a certain people. And what I've learned from the Rwandan genocide, where I went twice to investigate that, from the genocide against the Mayan people in Guatemala, and the aftermath of many other genocides in Africa and also in Cambodia, all on a horrific scale, the common thread is that in every case, the genocidal perpetrators are seeing the other as less than human. They've used various words. So I saw in the Amazon, the Amazonian first people were described with a word like diabla, the devil. They aren't really fully human. the genocide in Guatemala had the same kind of diminishing of the humanity of the other. And, of course, most of the world understands that in the brainwashed Hutu population, they set out to destroy the Tutsis because they saw them as a threat, but they also saw them as an other. Simply by being this other is often the starting point for why the ascendant group wants to destroy the other. And then it becomes complex as they try to justify it by arguing that it's to protect them, or it's to separate them, or it's to see that they have no hope anyway. And so I would come back each time from the Rwanda slaughter, which, Jim, was almost beyond words. It was not like a war zone. It was like a human abattoir. But I would come back from that in Guatemala, looking at my own backyard and studying closely, is this really what happened? That when you look into the frontier wars in Australia and you see the level of malevolent violence, so not accidental collateral damage, this was intentional, and therefore I saw very clearly that the studies by the scholars, the Henry Reynolds and Colin Tatts, who perhaps did the most thorough examination of genocide in Australia. His study was called Australia's Unthinkable Genocide, and he dismissed all of those denialists who said, no, this really, we were saving these people, we are protecting these people, we are removing their children because they were at risk of abuse. All of that kind of language dissolves when you see the policy itself that so very clearly set out in the belief that pure Aboriginal people, as they were seen, would die out very rapidly, and so by removing their children forcibly, they would prevent marriage between Aboriginal people and the half-caste, quarter-caste, and so on, and then you would see a very rapid disappearance of colour. You would have the white ascendancy. This glorious white future is what those protectors envisaged. And so it is a kind of eugenics.
Oh, yeah.
And that, unfortunately, is something that we must challenge in our history. We must understand it. We must look carefully at why these words apply. We must see that the conclusions when Sir Ronald Wilson and Professor Mick Dodson did their exhaustive study, the Bringing Them Home report,
yes,
that they concluded this indeed was genocide because they set out to destroy, if you like, the aboriginality of a people.
That's right.
They were determined to whiten and then whitewash the history itself.
Sobering words from our guest today, Jeff McMullen. Jeffrey, so thank you so much for being on the show. I'm kind of stuck for words. The way you've portrayed that and finished this interview, I appreciate your time, Jeff. Thank you so much for being on the show. And no, you're not well, but you just get better. And lots of love from Noongar Boodja and Murich Mag.
Thank you, Jim and Tony. And keep up your great work. The more we talk about it, the clearer it will become what we need to do next.
That's so true. We're going to play a Jimmy Little song for you, Jeff, so thank you so much for being on the show.
Thanks, Jeff. Take care.
Jimmy Little and Kylie Minogue. Great song. I love it. Bury Me Deep in Love. And, I'm reminded of Jimmy Little. He was found floating in a log. Yeah, poor little bubba. Yeah, he was given away and, he was found. So welcome back to Murich Mag, Noongar Radio and Great Southern FM, and we've got the pleasure of having the General Manager in the studio having a yarn on Murich Mag. G'day, Simon.
G'day, Jim. How are you going?
Hey, Jim. Where are you from?
Ah, yes. This question, I love it. My mob are Sicilian. They're from Castellamberto and Naso. They're the two towns that my folks are from. And I'm honoured to be joining you, as if I don't sometimes panel this show.
Good
as
idea.
If I'm not sometimes behind the desk. But not today, not today.
Hey, look, we've done over 150 podcasts on RTR FM, and this is the first time we've had all non-Aboriginal guests. So I don't know whether we should be honoured or flattered, or whether we're dropping colours and dropping talent, or we need to lift our game.
I'm always happy to be a token Wadjilla for Mortgage Mag. It is my honour to be with you both today. Tony, how are you going?
Yeah, good, Simon. Great to be here again, and thanks, as always, for the hospitality and the opportunity to share our messages and our stories to our listeners out there in radio land.
And, of course, RTRFM have their own Reconciliation Action Plan. They made a commitment to better the lives of First Nations people, and last night you did it really well. You invited us to panel. You invited us to show genocide in the Wildflower State. You were excellent in your facilitation, I've got to say.
Oh, well, I appreciate that, but I really want to thank the RTR community who came to the screening last night and really came to hear, to listen and to learn and be privy to, I guess, that truth-telling, both from yourselves. It was great to have the two of you and Alan, your co-exec producer on the film, do a little bit of a panel Q&A afterwards, but also the testimony of the survivors throughout the film. It was really powerful. And if I may, Jim, I don't even know if you know this, but I'm a film critic. I'm a film reviewer.
So I've learned that in the last 24 hours. So it's great to have you as a film step into your film critic role.
Well, this is the thing. So obviously I'm in supportive of the film, but I haven't seen the bloody thing. So I'm going, gosh, I hope it's good. I hope it's good.
Ooh, ooh.
But it was. It was such an excellent, really compelling movie, obviously. Really great to have that history laid out. And I think, Tony, you even mentioned this in the Q&A last night, using the words of, Neville the Devil himself, ultimately, to indict himself and his racism and his agenda of genocide. The film was just really powerful, and then to have those testimonies from the survivors, I think it just works as a really affecting and effective documentary, and I hope that people do go and see it on the 28th and at Luna. To be part of that session will be really something, not just to go and be privy to the truth telling, but to go and see an important and really compelling documentary as well.
We're promoting the 28th of April, obviously, and you need to go to the Luna Cinema website to book your tickets. But we're also doing a show, a launch on the 10th of May in Albany at the Albany Town Hall. So that information is going out as we speak, and Noongar Radio will be covering that, and also Great Southern FM. So what was the main thing that really jumped out at you? I mean, you've mentioned a few things, but
The main thing that jumped out at me was the film doesn't mince its words. It has genocide in the title, the testimony of the survivors. Mm. It goes there, physical abuse, sexual abuse. I think you need to be prepared going into the film, and I think it's important to have resources available afterwards. So a number like 13 Yarn is really great for those First Nations people, Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islanders, who may need support. But again, to see the survivors themselves tell their story, that's the reason. So I would really encourage people to go check it out.
So 13 Yarn, I don't know what the number is, but that's sort of hosted by Lifeline. Lifeline this week. They've seen a copy of the documentary, so they've really encouraged us to use the words that's important prior to any documentary and after. And we just need to make sure people take care of themselves. I was worried about people driving home last night. People were catching the train, so they didn't have to worry so much. But it's the after effect too.
Exactly.
Isn't it?
Mm. Yeah. So people need to be aware of that. But again, the film is really important nonetheless.
So that's so you're encouraging your people now to
wholeheartedly
give it a bit of a...
Absolutely. Go and check it out. The RTRFM crew saw it last night. I am positively reviewing your film, but more than that, it is an important work, and I hope that all West Australians see it.
Good on you. Simon, thanks for coming into Mornish Mag.
Thank you, folks.
Yep, thank you.